Fanny Herself by Edna Ferber. Preface. It has become the fashion among novelists to introduce their hero in knee pants, their heroine in pinafore and pigtails. Time was when we were rushed up to a stalwart young man of 24, who was presented as the pivot about whom the plot would revolve. Now we are led, protesting, up to a grubby urchin of 5 and are invited to watch him through 20 years of intimate minutiae. In extreme cases, we have been obliged to witness his evolution from swaddling clothes to dresses, from dresses to shorts. He is so often English. From shorts to Eton's. The thrill we get for our pains is when, at 25, he jumps over the traces and marries the young lady we met in her cradle on page 2. The process is known as a psychological study. A publisher's note on page 573 assures us that the author is now at work on volume 2, dealing with the hero's adult life. A third volume will present his pleasing senility. The whole is known as a trilogy. If the chief character is of the other sex, we are dragged through her dreamy girlhood or hoydenish. We see her in her graduation white, in her bridal finery. By the time she is 20, we know her better than her mother ever will, and are infinitely more bored by her. Yet who would exchange one page in the life of the boy, David Copperfield, for whole chapters dealing with Trotwood Copperfield, the man? Who would relinquish the button-bursting Peggotty for the saintly Agnes? And that other David, he of the slingshot, one could not love him so well in his psalm-singing days, had one not known him first as the gallant, dauntless vanquisher of giants. As for Becky Sharp, with her treachery, her cruelty, her vindictiveness, perhaps we could better have understood and forgiven her had we known her lonely and neglected childhood, with the drunken artist's father and her mother, the French opera girl. With which modest preamble you are asked to be patient with Miss Fanny Brandeis, age 13. Not only must you suffer Fanny, but Fanny's mother as well, without whom there could be no understanding Fanny. For that matter, we shouldn't wonder if Mrs. Brandeis were to turn out the heroine in the end. She is that kind of person. End of the preface of Fanny Herself. Chapter 1. You could not have lived a week in Winnebago without being aware of Mrs. Brandeis. In a town of 10,000, where everyone was a personality, from Hen Cody the drayman in blue overalls, magically transformed on Sunday mornings into a suave black broadcloth usher at the Congregational Church, to A.J. Dawes, who owned the waterworks before the city bought it. Mrs. Brandeis was a super personality. Winnebago did not know it. Winnebago, buying its dolls and china and Battenberg braid and tinware and toys of Mrs. Brandeis, of Brandeis's Bazaar, realized vaguely that here was someone different. When you entered the long, cool, narrow store on Elm Street, Mrs. Brandeis herself came forward to serve you, unless she was already busy with 2 customers. There were 2 clerks, 3 if you count Aloysius, the boy. But to Mrs. Brandeis belonged the privilege of docketing you first. If you happened in during a moment of business lull, you were likely to find her reading in the left-hand corner at the front of the store. Near the shelf were ranged the dolls' heads, the pens, the pencils, and school supplies. You saw a sturdy, well-set-up, alert woman, of the kind that looks taller than she really is, a woman with a long, straight, clever nose that indexed her character, as did everything about her, from her crisp, vigorous, abundant hair to the way she came down hard on her heels in walking. She was what might be called a very definite person. But first you remarked her eyes. Will you concede that eyes can be piercing, yet velvety? Their piercingness was a mental quality, I suppose, and the velvety softness a physical one. One could only think, somehow, of wild pansies, the brown kind. If Winnebago had taken the trouble to glance at the title of the book she laid face down on the pencil boxes as you entered, it would have learned that the book was one of Balzac's, or perhaps Zangwill's, or Zola's. She never could overcome that habit of snatching a chapter here and there during dull moments. She was too tired to read when night came. There were many times when the little Wisconsin town lay broiling in the August sun, or locked in the January drifts, and the main business street was as silent as that of a deserted village. But more often she came forward to you from the rear of the store, with bits of excelsior clinging to her black sateen apron. You knew that she had been helping Aloysius, as he unpacked a consignment of chamber sets, or a hogshead of china or glassware, chalking each